This is a replay of the Wednesday night, March 27th WGN show. We started right at 10. If you don't hear yourself on it, it's because you didn't call. I hope you'll rectify that soon. We're live Monday through Thursday evenings, and unless sports preempt us, that's from 10 to 1 Central. Dial 888-876-5593. My toll-free number from OneVoip. For the world's best customer service, it's OneVoip. Check them out at the1-VOIP.com. You'll be really glad you did.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
I'm Raleigh James. We've got 3 full hours to spend together tonight, and if it's on your mind, it'll be on mine. But judging by the news I've seen all day, probably the Key Bridge collapse is still at the forefront, and rightfully so. We don't expect things like that to happen. It's that simple. But they do, and they did. And what I found interesting in this case is the amount of people commenting online and the things that they are saying. And I guess on the one hand, it's humorous, but on the other hand, you say, please, dear Lord, don't let them vote. And my favorite is not a huge number of people, but the amount of people are convinced that we're covering up a terrorist plot. No. Well, I guess anything is possible, and the investigation into what happened will probably be a couple of years, certainly more than a year, probably up to 2 years before the NTSB releases some findings. That's why when I saw people who said the NTSB were going to release their findings at a 5:30 press conference, I thought, yeah, which year? All that said, while anything is possible, the likelihood of this being terror is about akin to the likelihood of this being the work of a UFO from Venus. All right, I mean, I guess it could happen, but it's unlikely. This you know, now how much of an accident was this is going to come out too, and it certainly looks that way. And what I mean by that is already Maryland has said absolutely, once it's determined what happened and why, they will look to others perhaps for compensation on this, because this is going to be obviously a multi-million dollar problem. But whether or not it's anything but an unpreventable accident, well, I guess you could say they're all preventable. But in this case, I think what you're going to find out is that the the city of Baltimore, the state of Maryland, the port and all that is just as culpable. And we'll talk about that. I've also heard people say that this is the largest container vessel around. You know, it's midsize. And it's certainly 3 times larger than anything that was built when the Key Bridge was constructed and, of course, finished in 1977. So it's about 3 times that, which is an interesting figure, because when they were designing bridges, and this is probably true today as well, but engineers normally would design a factor of what they wanted to represent in terms of safety. In this case, it would basically be about 2 times what the largest vessel at the time was that they were looking for safety. Well, as I mentioned, this is 3 times, and it's a mid-size vessel. It was after 2000 that the numbers really crept up. You were seeing it even in the 80s and 90s with things close to the Dali. But then in the early 2000, man, I'll tell you what, the largest, in case you're wondering, is the MSC Arena. IRINA. And it was launched about a year ago. Actually, I think exactly a year ago, last March. And it is the world's largest ship, container ship. And you're looking at it having a capacity of over 24,000 containers. So standard container being basically 8 foot by 20 foot. It can hold 24,346, if you want an exact number. And it's sailing under a Liberian flag, and which is not unusual either. That's let me jump ahead to the number of people who are convinced that this is China's doing. China isn't involved anywhere in this equation. Certainly they are involved in shipping, but not this time. When the ship was built, the Dali, it was sold to a company that actually was Greek owned, and it was largely owned by them until after 2016, and they were registered in the Marshall Islands, as I recall. And then after what happened in Antwerp, and there was an accident, although there were no deaths or anything like that, it got sold. And when it got sold, it went to the current owner, who has it registered, and by the way, that's Grace Ocean Limited, has it domiciled under Singapore. Singapore, no, is not a part of China. I've read that too. It's an island nation. It's independent. That's right. And it's by plane from Singapore to China. You're probably talking about a 4-hour ride. So it's close to Indonesia and others. But in any event, there's no China in this story anywhere. So if you hear that, I don't know how they're getting there. So what's in the containers? Well, we don't know. We know about some of it. We know that 56 of the containers were flagged as having hazardous material, and as far as we know, none of those were breached. There has been breaching of some container. Now, if you're saying, well, what is hazardous? And the 56 containers held about 760 tons of hazardous material, which would be things like, corrosives, batteries, for instance, flammables, lithium-ion batteries are big. So things of that nature. And as I say, some containers have been breached, but it's not believed that that there's anything at this point toxic involved. But of course, they're watching that. Others thought that, well, this is going to be an environmental hazard. All the fuel has spilled right into the river. No, not at this point. So what else can I tell you as far as that goes? Maybe a little bit about what actually happened from what we know. And a lot of this, of course, is conjecture. But the container vessel left the port of Baltimore, which is further north up the channel, from where the Key Bridge is, about 12:30. And when it did a tug-assisted turn. And this is important because the tugs, had it been tug-assisted all the way, this might have prevented it. But there's a lot of reasons that you wouldn't continue with tugs more than absolutely necessary, although I guarantee you they're going to look at that in the future. But is, A, it's much slower, because you're going to max out at about 8 knots, you're about 9 miles an hour, which is, by the way, what the Dali was going when it suffered the loss of control. But so it was moving through the Patapsco River, and the deal was when it happened, not so much what happened, because there obviously is a loss of electrical power. Now, again, what that is and how that happened and the order in which it failed, that's going to be important to the story that they'll be investigating. But so here they are. They're approaching the bridge. They lose electrical power. And that was noticeable, too. All the internal and upper deck lights go out. And as I say, when you are this close to a bridge, had it been 2 minutes later, it might have been considerably more catastrophic. Had it been 5 minutes earlier, maybe we wouldn't be reading much about it. But the bottom line is, here you are, you're on the bridge, and you lose power, and everything goes dark. Your radar, your radios, all the little lights that are giving you indications of what's going on, all now simultaneously go out. Yeah, that's right. You notice that the hiss of the air conditioner has gone to everything. And then the alarms start. And of course, the alarms start because, of course, there's been a power failure, but the battery backup alarms start going into gear. And, you know, obviously, you know something is wrong, but not only that, you've got to run around and cancel them. And by the way, you're heading for the bridge. And then you need to assess what you have and don't have. One of the problems with power failures is that they're almost never the same. Did you lose propulsion on this one? You know, what kind of control do you have? Can you switch over to backup systems? And by the way, this container vessel had two generators and two backup generators. But can you switch over to that? Now, probably most important, do you have control over the rudder? And if you don't, what angle is it stuck at? And meanwhile, you're thinking, I'm minutes from the bridge. So you get a total electrical failure. And, you know, here in this case, obviously the secondary generators kicked in at least for a time, but not for long, because you can see that the surge load took them out as well. So they trip. Ultimately, everything can trip. There are many variations, and the order in which it happens are going to determine everything. But in this case, what happened and what was obvious was when they lost control, the container ship started to go to the right. Which is, of course, you know, how the damage occurred. And so you say, well, why? It could be the rudder stuck in that direction. Could even be wind, depending as far as that goes. Now, you don't know what you're going to be able to recover. You've got a time frame that's unbelievable. Picture yourself in this situation. Now, at this point, your only option is to do hard astern, basically throw it in reverse. And that, a lot of people said, well, there's black smoke coming from the funnel. Well, that could have done it alone, though it also could have been the emergency generator, as far as that goes. But here you are. Now you're throwing it into reverse. But these are single screw vessels. And what that means is that you're only looking, you know, at one engine, basically one set of controls on this. So what happens? Well, you throw it in reverse and you may see some swinging in case to the fact it could be violent. So now you got stopping distance, and I probably don't even need to go over that, because when you're talking about a ship that's almost 1,000 feet long and over 150 feet wide, and again, not a monster compared to a lot of container ships today, you know you're not going to stop quickly. So of course, now that's when you let go the anchors. And that's not going to stop it, but you're hoping to buy time and slow it. Now, in the middle of all this, you'd better call Mayday if you see that you've got an incident that could be risked to life and it's imminent. And so while the crew is looking at, you know, who was on deck, was looking at all the things I've mentioned and more, they also have to call Mayday and say, hey, we've lost control and the collision with the bridge is possible. And actually, they did about 2 minutes before they hit, and that was enough time to allow traffic to be stopped from heading onto the bridge, certainly, and lives were saved by that. Now, the question, like I say, why weren't they using tugs? Well, again, time and money, part of it, because it'd be slower, and of course it'd be more expensive, but you can bet they'll probably be thinking about that in the future. So in terms of the seaworthiness of the ship, it was. Did it have a checkered past? Really not much more so than any of these vessels. It had incidents, but nothing that caused it to be questionable, and it was coming up for another inspection in its country where it's flagged, Singapore, in June. So that's what happened. Now, why it happened, how it happened, that there's going to be a long discussion about that. But man, I feel for the people who were on the bridge that night. But that's what we've got. And I think that as we're laying blame, remember when the bridge was built, It could not only withstand a direct hit of something of the largest size at the time, but twice the largest size of the time. And like I say, the Dali is three times the largest size, and of course, it's a mid-range vessel. The other thing that's not been talked about so much, and I'm a number of people talking about how it's going to affect transportation and all that kind of stuff, but when we look at the amount of goods we have that arrived on a ship, which is sadly virtually everything. We talk often about what's made here and what's not. This discussion needs to be had because you have container ships that are hauling as much as 24,000 containers traveling under bridges. And in some cases, they have been shored up, and in other cases, not. You can bet that when they rebuild the quay, they will think of pretty much everything at the time. So anyway, that's all I got, I think. I've got a lot of minutia that you probably don't care about, but it was just stunning to me when I read that it's China's fault. Nice to blame China on things if you're of that mind, but you can't for this. Sorry, you just can't. All right, so 888-876-5593. 8888 R-O-L-L-Y-E. And as you heard David Jennings, they did locate two more of the construction crew that was on the bridge in a vehicle, sadly deceased. And conditions are such that it may be a little while before the others are recovered. So eight total, one of them survived. Well, two of them survived, one of them pretty serious condition in the hospital. And it's two now confirmed dead, and it's assumed the other four will be as well. So we can talk about that or anything else that's on your mind. And I'll play your requests, too. In fact, there was one hanging around that I meant to play weeks ago, and I will next right here on WGN Radio.
Skies are black with darkness, and the night winds softly blow. It's my lonely hour between midnight and dawn.
Lonely hours, lonely, lonely hours.
Through the darkest night, I stand here all alone. Raindrops on my window pane remind me that she's gone. It's my lonely hour between midnight and dawn.
Lonely hours, lonely, lonely hours.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and that's Ronnie Hawkins. Yes, who we know from Mary Lou. Well, that's Lonely Hour, and Dave and LaSalle wanted to hear it. 1960 on Roulette. And no, it wasn't a hit, and even if it was, he wouldn't have gotten royalties out of them. All right, so 888-876-5593. So I got an email from Pete. I listen all the time, but I never call. Change that. Yes, I can use all the calls I can get. That would be 888-876-5593-8888 Raleigh. All right, and Pete says, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that the ship was owned by Maersk. Okay, he's talking about the Dali, and no, it's not. It's convoluted, and this is why I say those who were saying it's China's fault. No, there's a lot of nations involved, and that's not one of them. All right, so the ship was built in 2014 by Hyundai in South Korea. And they sold it to Ocean Bulk, which was a Greek company that owned it until after 2016 when they sold it to Grace Ocean. And Grace Ocean is a Singapore company. All right, so that's the ownership. Now, the ship is managed by Synergy. Synergy is a Singapore-based company that has about 666. So Synergy is doing the staffing and all of that. And Grace Ocean is the ownership. So where's Maersk come in? Well, they're the charter in this. They've chartered this ship. Maersk is arguably the biggest international shipper going. Certainly it was at one time. It probably still is. It's Danish-based. It's Copenhagen. And family-owned but publicly traded, and started in like around 1900 or so by a guy and his father, and grew into absolutely the biggest. They probably own over 600 ships, and including some of the mega ships that I was mentioning earlier. But in this case, they charter the Dali, meaning that it's their containers that are being moved. But no, they don't own the ship, and no, they don't staff the ship. So the employees, by the way, all of whom, the 22 crew on the Dali, are fine, from what I understand. Well, at least physically. But they work for Synergy. And Synergy is contracted by Grace Ocean, and Maersk is the one who is chartering it from Grace Ocean. All right, so there you have it. 888-876-5593, 8888-RALEIGH. But hopefully Pete will disagree and it'll cause him to call. I'll take all I can get. In the meantime, I got Judy, and Judy is in Grays Lake. So, Judy, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Good evening, Raleigh.
How are you?
Once again, I truly believe deep down it's an infrastructure problem. Our bridges, our roads, our drainage abilities, our grids. They're built, but they're not built with a vision for the future.
Well, I got to interrupt you and say, I absolutely agree with you. It is an infrastructure problem. I think they are built with a vision for as far as they can possibly see the future. The problem is that when the future eclipses anything they could have foreseen, they're not quick to react. In other words, I don't blame the people in 1972, which is now 52 years ago, for not knowing what the size of the vessels could possibly be. They took the largest in existence and doubled it and used that, which I think is reasonable. But we've had these huge vessels since, you know, the early 2000s, and you know, that's where why weren't they shored up before this? Because it's not a priority, obviously. And why weren't the habits, for instance, if you've got bridges, maybe you use tugs regardless. So I agree and disagree.
Well, why? I'm asking myself, how often were the veracity of the strength, et cetera, of these bridges tested? I know a week or two ago in Chicago, they listed the bridges over the river in order to do maintenance work, mm-hmm. to check everything out.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just, our country is, it's not a priority.
I agree.
Because it comes down to the bottom line, follow the money trail.
No, I absolutely agree with you, and it's not just the infrastructure to which you're referring to transportation, but as I've mentioned many times in this day and age, the fact that our electrical grid is not hardened, that a pulse bomb could take us out easily, that we do not have what we should have for connectivity and all that, it breaks my heart. Now, years ago, the guy who had been, I think, governor of Pennsylvania and mayor of Philadelphia before that, Ed Rendell, he became head of the DNC. And he really, really ran pretty much on infrastructure. And everything he said, and now we're talking, you know, over 25 years ago, everything he said was dead on point. And, of course, you know, nothing happened. So I don't know. I agree with you. It worries the hell out of me, particularly our electric grid. That frightens me.
Even our freight system,
which
has some of these containers that have all of these toxic chemicals. Just take a look over a year ago what happened in Palestine, Ohio.
Oh, I know. Yes, it's intermodal.
And
it's,
Greg Buttigieg or whatever his name is.
Right.
I mean, has he even gotten his butt down there?
Well, yes. No, actually,
it took over a year for Biden.
Yeah, no.
Who cares so much about the people and everything else?
Well,
to even make an appearance.
right? Buttigieg was called at 3:30 in the morning, and you know, did his standard quotes and all that thing. Of course, this starts at the local level. It's you know, basically the mouth to the port of Baltimore. It starts at the local, the county, the state,
get federal funding, really tired of platitudes taking the forefront of action and proactivity.
Well, I agree. Now, they did shore up two bridges. Betsy Ross and the Commodore were both shoring up. But it's not only shoring up this bridge. I also say that why don't they use tugs anywhere they are within shooting distance of a bridge like this? Because tugs could have prevented this.
It's money.
Well, of course it is.
That's why.
Of course it is. And,
that's why I say, follow the money trail and you're going to get your answer.
Well,
and it's that way about so many damn things.
Well, who was it? I think the Frenchman, was it de Tocqueville, who came to study our prison system in the 1800s, and he looked around and said, your form of government is lost as soon as people realize that, you know, they can vote to be enriched themselves, and as soon as politicians realize they can run saying they'll enrich them. I've paraphrased that badly, but sure, it's the seven-second soundbite. I agree.
It's just preventable. Most of the time, accidents do happen, but, you know, I just sit here and I'm shrugging my shoulders and I'm going, and I wonder how much transparency. I really wish they would do away with that word, because it really doesn't exist.
Well,
is going to come out of any of these studies.
Oh, I think we'll see what happened. I don't really doubt that. But in terms of you know, I don't know about how the blame will be proportioned. But this was preventable from the standpoint: if you know you have a bridge that is not up to the current standards, and you know that you can use tugs to, in fact, eliminate this problem. Now, what that would do? It would cost money, and it would cost time, and time is money, so it would cost a lot of money. But it could have been done the same way they turned around.
Many trucking accidents because time is money and they keep two different logs.
Well, not as much as they used to, I'll tell you that. But then again, you get into the discussion of hours of service, and you know, I don't know how you legislate someone to be sleepy at a certain time. So
and drugs that help you stay awake in order to drive.
Well, there's less of that than there was, but still, I think the idea of the hours of service is well intended, but I think in reality is the craziest thing I've ever heard. I don't think a bureaucrat can decide when a driver's tired. But that's what we got.
Yep, and it's failing up.
Yes, it is. Well, as I always say, I'm glad I'm not young. It's terrible to say.
Me neither.
Yeah, exactly. It's terrible, terrible to say, but really, that's usually my final stand on it. So I don't know, but I think you'll find out exactly what went wrong here. But again, will they do what they, and of course they'll rebuild this bridge to standards. No doubt they'll do that. But will they look at other bridges and at least say, maybe we should use tugs?
You know, and they also, a lot of people don't know, when these things are built, not only do they use actuaries to figure out how many people potentially could die while building these structures, but also down out along the way without it even exceeding its standard when it's built.
Oh, I'm sure that actuaries and other statisticians are involved in every step of this, and to some degree, yes, it's a guessing game. I don't think there's a viable way to guarantee, quote unquote, but you want to come as close as you can. And this is a stark reminder of what you started to talk about when you called, that our infrastructure is not in a good place.
Oh, absolutely not.
I agree. I'm glad you called.
And especially now with AI being used weaponized?
Well,
oh, please.
I loved, I don't know if you were listening last night, but I loved the Ford dealer in Watsonville, California that debuted AI. And of course, you know, Watsonville is not all that far from Silicon Valley. So, you know what happened, obviously. It got to the point where it was trained by interlopers to agree to deals of selling cars for a dollar. The Watsonville dealer wouldn't give up the cars, but it certainly proved the point that no, AI is at best a work in progress and a bad one.
Now they're letting AI, I'll use the word simmer, so that they can intellectually get this, there's air quotes around that, converse with each other to think and act like a human without humans even having anything to do with them.
Right. Oh, I know.
It's so scary.
Yeah. Oh, I know. It'll eventually get to a very interesting point. But right now, as much as they call it artificial intelligence, all of this is still largely deductive reasoning. And yes, it's elaborate, but I'm worried about when it starts to really induce things. That's when
deductive reasoning. Take a look at our Congress. Please tell me, is there common sense? Is there integrity? Is there morality? Et cetera, et cetera. And this is going to be the third election that I write in somebody.
Interesting. Well, good for you.
And I'm the one who listens on the radio to the debates because I don't want to be distracted. And then for the last one, I'll go in, turn on the TV. There's no light that goes up to anybody's eyes. There's no passion except for me.
Well, my favorite
first,
is
you do have to be a narcissist to run for, and there should be a monetary cap on what somebody can spend for each electoral type of seat, from school board all the way up to presidency.
All right, Judy.
That way,
spoken.
Maybe we would get people, new blood in there if you're not buying your seat.
Well, there you go. I don't know. I love the guy.
I'm sorry.
Who,
I will get off my
Yeah, appreciate sofa. It. All right, thanks, Judy. Appreciate it. All right, I love the guy who, along with Judy, said she's going to write it in, who literally changed their name, I think he was in Alaska, to none of the above when he ran for office. Sadly, he didn't win, but I thought at least he would have gotten something for creativity. But I'm not going to resolve the political issues of the day. That's way beyond anything I can possibly do. So I'll just try to have a good time and play one of your requests coming up and talk to John. He's in Covington. And you too, if you'll call 888-876-5593 on WGN Radio. Oh, now that's so terrible. Adam just reminded me I was supposed to tell you about the CC Radio 2E, and I don't know why I didn't earlier because I love this radio. It is really neat. And it's my bedside companion. And you know, the thing about all of the radios that Bob Crane developed is they just have better reception. Yeah, than anything that's available these days. You know, years and years ago, decades ago, reception was almost a given in radios. Then after a while, not so much. Well, if you've got a radio on hand, take it and put it right next to a CC Radio 2E if you get one. Tune into a weak AM station, and I'll tell you what. CC Radio 2E will blow it out of the water compared to what you can get. In fact, it may be the only way you're going to hear it. So it's great AM, terrific AM, and great FM as well. So for tuning alone, it's worth it. But there are so many other really neat features on this as well. It's got a digital readout and a dial light and a timer and a clock, and it's got digital tuning, but you can fine tune in 1 kilohertz increments, and it's truly terrific. It also has the weather band and a weather alert, which is nice, and the 2 meter ham band. And by the way, I've had a lot of people say, well, what exactly am I going to get? And I'll tell you, if you go to ccrane.com, ccrane.com/2-meter, the number 2-meter, Bob will have told you all about it. And it can be a lot of fun to do that. But just as far as a day-to-day radio you can depend on, this is a great one. So go to ccradio.com anytime, ccradio.com, and take a look at the CC Radio 2E. If you can't go online for for some reason, and I hope you will, because there's a world of information as well as products. You can call them, and they've got terrific customer service. They'll answer all your questions. You can order by phone, or if you want to have them send you a catalog, they'll do that too. 800-522-8863, 800-522-TUNE. Otherwise, yeah, I mean, you can get the quicker shipping on Amazon and things like that, but for the real deal experience and all of the information that you want, go to ccradio.com and look at the CC Radio 2E. You tell them Raleigh sent you from WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and yes, those are the Manhattans on Carnival 1969. Karen in Chicago wanted that. Call somebody, please. It was a flip side, and a wonderful one, too. So 888-876-5593. Well, Johnny D stole my thunder. He sent me an email saying, don't forget to wish me happy birthday. Well, we were going to do that. In fact, Carol even had that right on the show prep list, the dashboard for today. So yes, it's after midnight now on the East Coast, and Johnny D is in Ohio, so he's in Eastern time. So it is technically March 28th, and that means it's Johnny D's birthday. Happy birthday, Johnny D. All right. And he asked me, it's interesting. I love the way his mind works. He said, you say that Dali is owned by a Greek company. Is Aristotle Onassis and his family involved in that anyway? Well, clearly Aristotle's not. He died in 1975. But no, there's no trajectory in common there at all. What?
Isn't it next hour?
What? No, because he's in Eastern time.
Oh, okay.
John comes in trying to tell me time. No, he's in Eastern time, dear. All right, so that is the deal. Okay, so Ocean Bulk Marine is a company. It is Greek, and Petros Pappas started that. And in fact, he rose to CEO around the time that they bought the Dali, which was built for them by the Hyundai company in South Korea. And in fact, for 2014, he was Lloyd's List. He was voted Shipping Personality of the Year. I'm sure that's a spellbinding group of people. In any event, no. So there's no Aristotle Onassis connection or any of his descendants, if he had any, that are still with us. I don't know. All right, so I'll have to look about that. What? Because I know the poor troubled daughter is no longer with us, but I don't know if the rest of the family is gone too. But anyway, they don't have anything to do with Ocean Bulk, which doesn't own the Dali now either. All right, so John in Covington, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Hey, Raleigh. About 3 weeks ago, I guess, you just happened to mention the singer Nancy Wilson's name, and just in passing, and that got me to, I always liked her, but I always found it odd, like, why didn't she make it, like, big?
Well, yeah, I'll tell you why. Because, you know, when you're talking about making it big, usually you're talking about a pop singer, and she was pop standards for sure, but more known actually as a jazz singer.
I agree with you, yeah.
So, in fact, it was Cannonball Adderley that suggested she moved to New York, because she's originally from Ohio, from Chillicothe.
That is so weird that you mentioned that name, because I was listening to her stuff today,
uh-huh.
And so its song was called "The Masquerade Is Over."
Uh-huh.
If you know that one,
sure.
And it's that gentleman you just mentioned, Adderley,
yep.
And it was such a good song simply because. It's so simple in the fact you've got a piano, you've got a bass fiddle, and you've got, for percussion, you don't have the sticks, you have the, like, brushes.
Yeah.
And it is so good. Oh, my goodness. Funny thing, we went to Crosley Field.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and it was raining on and off all day long. And she sung the national anthem,
mm-hmm.
a cappella at the Reds game at Crosley Field.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell you, the fewer the instruments, the better she sounded. It was amazing.
No, she was terrific. And when she first went to New York, after Cannonball Adderley introduced him, including to his manager and all that, she really started to do well with live in-person gigs. In fact, she was at the Coconut Grove and critical acclaim on that, but a number of other gigs as well. And, you know, she really became a sweetheart of television people, too. Now, 64, of course, How Glad I Am, got a Grammy, for God's mm-hmm. sakes. But, you know, she had her own TV show for a year, the Nancy Wilson.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, the Nancy Wilson Show. It even got an Emmy. And
wow,
she was on all sorts of things. In fact, cameos. Like, she did a cameo on I Spy. Perfect for her. And the FBI,
yeah,
and
yeah.
Room 222. And, you know, on and on. Hawaii 5-0. All the things that were, you know, you'd see her, like, on the Danny Kaye Show. That would be typical for her. Or the Smothers
mm-hmm.
Brothers.
Yeah, you're right.
Kraft Music Hall. You know, so this was a lot of exposure. And it was interesting because she had been on Capitol, and then they were doing nothing, and then in the late 70s, they re-signed her and wanted to broaden her appeal, and it wasn't going to make it, and as far as for that goes. And again, it's because you look at some of the great jazz singers, and also a lot of even the pop standard singers, you know, by the 1980s, and they just didn't sell a lot of records.
I'll tell you, funny thing was, we're at that ball game, and she sang the national anthem, and as I said, it rained all off and on
mm-hmm.
that whole day.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, the game got called in the third inning, so we come home, and my dad says, well, we'll find a ball game. So on his Crosley radio, he picks up WOR, and we listen to the Mets.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Yeah, no big deal, but at any rate, so we're listening to this thing, and lo and behold, there's a commercial for Stroh's Beer, and
sure.
Nancy Wilson's singing it,
yeah.
And it sounds like a hit record.
Oh, yeah.
It's a advertisement for Stroh's Beer, and it was just sounded so good. Anyway, so that same week, she was in town, game got canceled, and she was playing the Lookout House. So after Dad heard the Stroh's commercial, he said, Betty, that's my mom, Betty, we're going to Lookout House. We're going to see Nancy Wilson. And they did.
Now, what?
And Dad said,
What year about would this have been?
65.
Okay, I was going to say, I knew it was before 74. And the reason I say that is she got married to the Reverend Wiley Burton, and he caused her to abstain from performing in venues like that. And so
that's a shame. That's
yeah, well, for over 20 years, she did not. do that. And then, you know, later things turn around again. But for the most part, if you wonder, gee, why wasn't I seeing her in more of those venues because she was so great? Well, she was declining the invitations.
Wow. Wow. That's a shame. And my dad went on to say after he got back from the lookout house, and my mom, she's very easy on the eyes.
Oh, yes. Yes. Well,
yeah, absolutely.
And she proved that in television. God knows.
Yeah.
All right.
Absolutely.
Well,
thank
good
you,
memories.
Raleigh,
thanks
for
calling.
Call.
Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
All right. So 888-876-5593-8888. Raleigh, we will get to, oh, Johnny D, the birthday boy. We'll get to Johnny D. We'll get to Chris in St. Joseph, too. Don't go away, Chris. And we'll talk to you if you call right here on WGN Radio.
Many a tear has to fall, but it's all in the game. All in the wonderful game that we know as love. You have words with him, and your future's looking thin, but these things your hearts can rise above. Once in a while he won't call, but it's all in the game. Soon he'll be there at your side with a sweet and he'll kiss your lips.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Sergeant Pappy and Gary wanted to hear Tommy Edwards. So yeah, that was a hit twice for him. 1951, a version of that on MGM, and then they re-released it in 58, and it was once again number one record. So there you have it. 888-876-5593. And happy, happy birthday to Johnny D. How are you, Johnny D?
Oh, any better water, I'd start walking on water.
All right, now, with that in mind, how are you going to spend the day?
Probably eating.
Good.
Because I'm fasting right now. I have to get blood work in the morning.
Oh, okay.
You there?
Yes, I am. What type of blood work?
I have to get blood work in the morning, okay. So I'm not allowed to. After midnight, which was, what, 15 minutes ago or something?
Yeah.
I'm allowed to drink water at all.
Yes, all the water you want. But for a minute there, I thought maybe you were celebrating Ramadan, and I was going to say, you can eat at night. But no, in your case, you can't. So nothing till after the blood work.
Ramadan.
Well, it's right now. It's March 10th.
Really?
Yes, it's March.
I didn't know that.
March 10th through April 9th this year.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Mark's tomorrow. Yeah, Good Friday, Mark.
That's right.
Mark, the guy that always says, it's my birthday on the 29th, doesn't it? Mark?
So, well, very, very good, though. You will be, after the blood work, on your birthday, no less, you are a glutton for punishment, you'll go out and shout.
I know.
Yeah,
it just worked out that way.
Yeah, well.
Right
afterwards, you'll go out and chow down.
Well, it'll be early because my plan here,
yes,
is to, you see, they open up at 7:30, this place I go to, this lab, you know?
Yeah.
And actually, I was supposed to go yesterday, but they were only open from 7:30 till 11:30. Mm. Or today, right? Yesterday, okay.
One of those
and
days.
I didn't go because I thought, oh, I'll go later. Yeah, it was only open 11:30, you know, and it was already like 2:30 or so. But anyhow, you know, thank you to John. He answers the phone just like you did, and he goes, "Happy birthday, John." There,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And I said, you know, thank you. Then I was telling him how, you know, last year I told you I'm going backwards. Like, I was 17. And I just turned 27.
Yeah.
Get it?
Yeah, no, I understand that. Well, most people just have the anniversary of their 39th birthday, but that's fine. 27's good.
Yeah, but then I was telling John, you know, once I get to 77, then it ain't going to work, okay? Because so when I get to 78, I'll be 87.
Well, things happen.
Yeah, you know, so it's not going to work. It'll only work for a few more years here. About what? About 4 or 5 more.
Well, you've got time. I hope you can spend all of them the way you want to.
Me too.
Yeah.
So anyhow, was that his name, Aristotle Onassis, the guy that was the ship tycoon?
Yes, but and he had a bunch of ships, but no, that was all gone.
Didn't he marry Kennedy's wife?
Yeah, absolutely, yes. That was the deal. That was the only way she could keep the Kennedys out of her kid's life. And it worked, but they were none too happy, as far as that goes. But nonetheless, he was one of the more famous tycoons from Greece. And yes, he did have several hundred ships. And
he had a lot of money, didn't he?
Yeah, well, he was from Smyrna, and he started in the 20s, and he wound up becoming probably at the time the wealthiest person of Greek origin alive.
Oh boy!
Yeah.
I thought that was Morpheus. He's in there messing with Becky right now.
I understand that, but Morpheus is only with us in spirit. Onassis was, in fact, with us from 1906 to 1975.
Well, yeah, he wasn't that old, was he? Was he?
No, you're absolutely right, he wasn't. And he did a number of things. He had his own brand of cigarettes. And in fact, he brought out these cigarettes with pink tips for the female market. I'm not making that up. And he was, though, always wanting to market things. And I think the cigarettes was probably one of the first. But he was a millionaire by the time he was 25. And that was doing import-export. He was importing Turkish tobacco to Argentina. I'm not making this up.
Made me think of it. Not to interrupt you, Raleigh, but when you said that, I remember years ago, I was telling you about a friend of mine. He used to live in Florida, Miami.
Yes.
And I said, Frank, I says, what do you do down there? You know, because he moved away from Youngstown, you know. Yeah. And he says, oh, I'll just say I'm in the import-export business. But go ahead.
Yeah, right.
Go ahead.
Yeah. But he did. He had offices in Buenos Aires, and then he bought a ship when he was in his 20s, his first one. And, of course, there was a fleet of freighters and tankers. And I think he, you know, had like under 100, but maybe like 70 vessels. And he was one of the guys who used Liberian registry. Some Panamanian
what
stuff.
Kind
of? Liberian registry. Didn't you ever notice on a lot of these cruise ships their Liberian registry? It's because... take a look. It's because the laws are a little more, shall we say, lenient in certain countries. So it's not unusual for people to have registry in a number of places. In Liberia, you know, is probably one of the biggest that people use. John says, shut up. Hang on a minute. Don't go away. And I'll pick it up right there in Liberia. Oh, maybe not. Right after the news right here on WGN Radio.
Understand. and wonder what would I be without you in my life. Everything was just a bore. All the things I did since I've done them before. But you brighten up all my day with a love so sweet in so many ways. I wanna stop.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. David LaSalle requested that a while ago, and I finally got around to playing it. So Marvin Gaye, How Sweet It Is to Be Loved by You. 1964 on Tamla. And we're talking to Johnny D about Aristotle Onassis. And he made the bulk of his huge wealth.
Okay, Molly, not to interrupt, but
yeah.
I have somebody here that wants to say hello to you. This is her birthday present to me. Okay, go ahead, you.
Go ahead. Hi, Raleigh.
Hi, Becky. Why are you awake?
He woke me up, and I'm not happy.
You shouldn't be. You absolutely shouldn't be.
I interrupted her, Morpheus.
Go back to
sleep. Well, it's my birthday, so, yeah. You know, that's my birthday present.
Yeah,
she
right.
says hello
right.
to you.
Well, and that's so very sweet of you, but you can watch him in pain tomorrow morning when he has his blood let.
That's right. I hope they really... in some heart.
No. I use the baby needle. You know,
that's right. Baby.
All right. You go back with Morpheus. I'll go in the other.
Bye, Becky.
Bye, Raleigh.
That was terrible. You're not supposed to wake her up.
I ain't got nobody to hang out with now, Raleigh. Right. She's just gone, you know.
I know. Yeah. All right. So,
what are you going to do?
The Egypt-Israeli conflict is what caused Aristotle Onassis to become like a billionaire. That's where he made the big money.
He was a billionaire?
Yeah,
I
think he was. If not, awfully close. What had happened, you know, like I say, he started that shipping company and then remember, well, you probably only remember it historically because you would have been very young, but Egypt and Israel obviously were not very happy with each other. And so Cairo nationalized the Suez Canal in 1956. And the deal was, he did that because he
Wait
wanted...
Wait a minute, not to interrupt, but didn't we own the Suez Canal?
No, we do not own the Suez Canal. And so he nationalized it, and he originally he was wanting to bar passage to Israeli ships, but ultimately he barred passage to, like, everybody. It was a mess. And the bottom line, though, is that, you know, he possessed the power to charge whatever rates he could and all that, so it got very, very expensive shipping-wise. So Onassis got in there and had the right to use there and talk about charging whatever rates he could because no one else was shipping through that. He, from what I understood, was earning over $2 million a trip. So
yeah.
He made it. Now, of course, the...
How about the Panama Canal? Didn't we own that?
Oh, we sure did. Don't start me. I'll be very sad. I might cry.
No, we own one of those canals.
Yeah, we don't own it anymore. All right, I'll stop sobbling here. And yes, I'm very upset about that. But anyway, one of the problems was that... So he made a lot of money with the shipping company, but he didn't bother to run it very well. And so he was always, you know, in trouble with this country or that country. And then he ran aground in Nova Scotia, and I think it was like the biggest oil spill off the East Coast in Canada.
No kidding.
Yeah, it was like 1970. He was married to Jackie at the time. And it wasn't, but the deal is what they found was that the Arrow, the ship in question, the Liberian registered Arrow, was in such trouble it didn't even have
radar. Not to interrupt, but when you're saying Liberian, I keep thinking of the Iberian Peninsula.
No, Liberian. Liberia. It's a
Liberian. Liberian.
Liberia. It's a country in Africa.
Liberia, okay.
Yes, it's
but I'm thinking of the Iberian.
No, it has Peninsula. Nothing to do with that. All right. So anyway, the same time he started getting into the Suez Canal deal, he took over the Greek National Airlines because they were in trouble. They were going to go belly up. And so he signed a contract that granted him all the operational rights. In fact, only he and Howard Hughes are the only two people who ever, ran private airlines like that as individuals. So anyway, he wound up turning Olympic Airways into just the, you know, the flying luxury. I mean, like, he would use gold.
That's the name of the airways.
No, it was Olympic. It was Olympic, yeah. And he'd use like gold-plated silverware, and, you know, all the stewardesses all had to wear, like, you know, whoever the big designer, Pierre Cardin, or whoever the big designer was of the day.
No kidding.
Yeah, and I think 74, you know, the year before he died, that airline transported a couple million passengers. They had about 7,400 people employed. So he was one of, like I say, he and Howard Hughes, who owned TWA, he was one of the, I mean, you know, before Hughes Air West and all that, to own a private airline. So that was the deal. Now, the contract ran out just before he died. It ran out in December of 74. And so Onassis terminated the deal. He wasn't interested in staying on. There were, like, strikes and problems. But anyway, then he died the next year. But all wasn't rosy. I mean, he had had some type of a shipping interest other than what I was mentioning. And he had a whaling enterprise. I don't know what you do with a whaling enterprise, but he had to sell them to a Japanese company. It was a whole big mess. And so, and then he got into this fight with the Prince of Monaco, the one that Grace Kelly married. It had to do with, like, building hotels on in Monaco. And yeah, he and Prince Rainier became, like, enemies.
How do these guys do this stuff? Yeah.
I don't know. I don't have the energy myself. But anyway, he left Monaco for good in the 60s. But I don't know if he was a billionaire. I would assume he was. He had gold processing plants in Uruguay.
You would have been one today. I know that.
Well, of course. Of course. Yeah. I'll have to look that up. Was Aristotle...
But Jackie Onassis, did she die right after him?
No. She lived till, I think, like 94 or so, 1994, thereabouts. But anyway, was Aristotle Onassis a billionaire? Let's see. What does it say? One of the world's richest and most famous men. I don't care about that. Richest man in the world. The Suez Canal made him the richest man in the world. I'm sure that's right. But it doesn't... worth billions of dollars. Billions, I tell you.
Well, there you go.
Billions of dollars. Well, you know, he had to pay Jackie $3 million for her to marry him.
For her to marry him?
Well, yeah, because he had to... Okay, if she was going to get married... She was going to lose a $3 million trust from the Kennedy family. And so he said, don't worry, I'll just write you a check.
Well, you know, how about that, huh?
So I looked up during the news to see if he had any heirs, and he does.
Yeah.
Christina's daughter, Athena, is the heir to all this.
And he has a daughter that
Well, Christina's dead, but the granddaughter. Oh. Yeah, she's the sole heiress of Christina Onassis.
How old is she?
Well, let's look her up. I don't normally know these things. She's 39. She was born in 1985 in the American Hospital of Paris.
That's right in my ballpark.
Yeah, well, she got married in 2005 and divorced in 2017.
Yeah, she married the wrong guy. Yeah.
Well, I guess so. So... That was, and she has three half-siblings via her father's relationship with someone or other. Her father was Terry Roussel. But, and then, of course, before Jackie, after his divorce, he was involved with that opera singer. Remember Maria Callas? That was a big deal, too.
No, I really don't remember Maria Callas.
You don't remember Maria Callas? You just never read the tabloids. But, yeah,
I don't read the tabloids, but I was wondering this. Did you ever get that weapon that I was telling you about the last 2 million years, that book?
No.
You never got it?
No.
I thought you said you ordered it.
Well, I did, and I don't think it ever came.
I can't believe it. You better check into that. You're missing out on everything now.
I guess... Well, you'll have email me the information again, so I'll figure out at least how to trace it.
What do you mean? You found it on eBay.
Yeah, I'm sure, but that doesn't mean... Yeah, and it probably is debited from a credit card of mine, but I don't think I got it. So tell me the rest of the story, and I'll look.
Yeah, well, no, it's called The Last 2 Million Years. It's a Reader's Digest, I think.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I ordered that.
Well, you never got it.
Well, I don't think so. Now, I'll have to talk with John. He might have gotten it. I don't know, but I did.
Well, you'd have known if you got it.
Well, not necessarily.
Because it's a big book.
No, I understand that. I'll ask him.
Yeah. All right, well, Raleigh, it was nice to, you know, spending some time with you. I can't think of too many more people I'd rather spend time with.
Well, happy birthday, and hope the blood draw is painless.
Oh, it will be, because them girls are trained down there. I got trained. I used a baby needle.
Oh, man. All right. Good luck. Thanks. Appreciate
bye-bye.
It.
Bye-bye.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, my veins just collapse at the thought of it. And so, yeah, after they go for, like, the sixth try, I said, you're out of here. All right, so we'll get to Chris and St. Joseph, and there'll be room for you, too, on WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Those are the Shirelles. Flip Side, Baby It's You's on the other side. The Things I Want to Hear, also known as Pretty Words, 1961 on Scepter. And obviously we're going to be talking to Fran in a little while. I'm looking forward to that. All right, so Chris in St. Joseph has been waiting a while. So Chris, thanks for waiting. Welcome to WGN Radio.
Hello, Raleigh.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Oh, I can't complain.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm a second-time caller, and... I'm over here in St. Joe, Benton Harbor, Michigan, on the other side of the puddle. And last time I called, we talked about doo-wop and rocket radios.
Yeah.
And I probably blathered all over the place
How
much I love how much I love AM.
Yeah.
Still hanging in there. I would. I think I've got to get one of those radios that you advertise, yeah. Clarkson's or whatever.
Oh, the Sea Crane radios. But, yeah, the Sea Crane, they're great.
Yeah, yeah, that one. But what I wanted to talk about with you is the tragic loss of six lives on that bridge in Baltimore.
Yes.
The Francis Scott Key Bridge.
Right.
Longest bridge in that urban area. It's not an infrastructure problem, but a shipping industry safety regulation issue. That's the point I'm trying to make. And so, two distinctly different things. Are you with me?
Oh, I am absolutely with you. And no, I want to talk about this. One of the things is that it was perfectly legal for him not to use tugs at that point in time. He had to use a tug to turn around leaving the Baltimore Harbor, you know, the Baltimore port, but then he didn't have to. That alone would have saved this.
Correct. Yes, I had a discussion this evening with a friend. We'll call him Bob. His name's Fred, but we'll call him Bob. He has a master's license, which means he can... Pardon?
I said yes. Go on.
Oh, he can drive any vessel that floats anywhere on any water. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, if you will, there's people out there. But he is retired, and he has a master's license, and... we tried to track it back to where is the source of the of this tragedy, and he said, okay, there it was reported, and this probably should be confirmed, that while in port, Dolly, the ship, was having engine problems. They left with engine problems.
Here, hang on a minute. Don't go away. I want to do the news, and then I want to get back there, and we'll talk about those problems, which were noted in some other ports. But pick it up right there. Don't go away. All right, we'll talk to Chris next hour, and Fran next hour, and hopefully you too on WGN Radio.
That I've spent for you. Think about the good things that I've done for you. Think about the bad things I tried not to do. Come on, sugar, and think, yeah, think about the good things.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James, and that's James Brown and Think. And it was, let's see, who was it? I know somebody requested James Brown. Don and Beloit wanted to hear some James Brown. 1960 on King. Yes, indeed. 888-876-5593. We are talking to Chris in St. Joseph, and I left him hanging there with, as you mentioned, previous propulsion issues. That was discovered in Chile. Do we know something since then?
No, I don't, Raleigh. Well, as I was speaking with my friend Bob this evening, who is has the master's license, he was saying that there are rumors or reports, I don't, you know, unfounded for me, but that the while the ship was in port, they were having engine problems. And left and had a failure of propulsion and therefore control. Now, the point is that I'm trying to make is, did the harbor pilot, who is a highly skilled local pilot that shepherds these big, huge ships in and out of port, know that there were engine problems? The captain takes over, or the master, once they're out of the port, and then the harbor pilot leaves and brings other ships in and out.
Right.
So, yes. And the important thing they did is they called a mayday, and they were able to stop vehicular traffic on the bridge before it fell down. But if you look at, there's one photograph of the bridge girders laying over the bow of the ship, and I just wanted to try to make this point to my fellow listeners that there's no bridge that could withstand that type of an impact. If you consider the mass and the momentum of that ship against a steel girder bridge like that.
Well,
that's
why they have buffers. That's why they have a number of things that they'll hit before on modern bridges, that they'll hit before they actually hit the bridge.
Yeah, and I don't know if this...
The Key Bridge had nothing.
Port.
No, Key Bridge had absolutely nothing. It was slated. They did it to the Commodore, and they did it to Betsy Ross. They did not do anything to the Key. So the standards that were in place when that was designed in 1972 were all that was there. It was passing inspections for what it was, but it wouldn't have passed a current inspection because, as I mentioned, the dolly, which is only a medium-sized vessel comparatively, you know, there's things that are twice as big. Mm-hmm. The dolly was three times larger than the largest vessel when the Key Bridge was designed. And when they design the bridges, they have a factor where usually it's a factor of two where they have to have it withstand twice the largest known vessel. Well, this would have been three times the largest known vessel, and this isn't one of the biggest.
Yeah, I have to agree with that. There should have been better protection.
Well,
again, for those bases.
Right. My feeling is if they weren't going to, at this point, expend the millions of dollars to put in the proper barriers, if that wasn't in the budget right now, then what they should have done was what they did further up north on the Patapsco River, where the a tug is used. To get out of the Port of Baltimore, you use a tug, and then the tug releases it as it continues down the river. Well, considering what the Key Bridge is and how exposed it was, they probably should have used tugs. Now, the expense in that wouldn't so much be the expense in using the tugs, it would how much it would slow it down as well, because the tugs aren't going to go more than 8 knots. So,
correct.
But that would
and my
it.
Friend, my friend who was a master said that that ship, if the harbor pilot was fully informed, we don't know that, they should have had four tugboats on that ship.
Well, and what's interesting is that when questioned, the authorities in Maryland say, no, it's not our standard that you have to use them, but it should be.
Yes, I agree completely.
You know, anything that's going through that can actually take the bridge apart should have to be should have to have tugs involved. Period.
Yeah, I will certainly Raleigh will not disagree with that. I think serves the point that it's a question of shipping industry safety regulation.
Well, right, and just what the city of Baltimore and the state of Maryland is willing to expend themselves and is willing to force as regulations. You know, it's there's a number of places you can go ahead and dock other than Port of Baltimore, but right now it's only the ninth biggest on the East Coast. It's not by any means the biggest, but for automotive and for, strangely enough, a lot of those cruise lines, like the Carnival boats, they normally will dock there. And
there's some inner harbor fun stuff there.
I'm with you, absolutely. So I guess they didn't care if people got to Dundalk or not. But the reality now, and if you've been to Dundalk, you know why they didn't care. But in any event, the reality is that you, on this particular, area, you're inconveniencing trucks now for like 40 miles because they can't go through the tunnels. And so, not most of them anyway. And so they're going to, they're going to get to know 695 in the other direction, all around the Beltway.
Oh, yeah. It's a massive disruption.
Yeah.
It
is. Absolutely. And it will be an expensive one, too. And when you consider what it would have cost to fortify the bridge or what it would cost in terms of not only dollars, but all the political implications to change the standards of what needs to happen there, that would have been a bargain compared to this.
Absolutely.
And then the other thing is that a lot of people are comparing it to the Skyway Bridge, and au contraire, the deal with the Skyway Bridge, it was two separate bridges, and only the southern lanes were affected, so they were able to take the other bridge and have it be one-lane traffic in each direction. So it was slower, but for 7 years it existed. This was one bridge. It is gone.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Along with the lives of the six people that were out there.
That's heartbreaking.
Yeah, the infrastructure is actually pretty delicate, I suppose.
Well, I'm very worried about it, not only for transportation, intermodal all along the way, but I'm very worried about it, as I mentioned, for our power grid. I'm very worried about it with regard to the amount of people who are dependent upon internet usage and how easy it would be to cripple that.
I agree. I gave up my landline, and I'm not sure I should have done that. But
well,
then again,
you're not going to have a choice down the road. And in some cases, a lot of people who think they have landlines along the way don't. In other words, it's copper mm-hmm. from the house to the node, but then it goes into mm-hmm. a VoIP switch. So landlines are not going to be possible, true landlines, in the future, and already
yeah.
aren't in a lot of places. But in general, you know, you think about it, whether it's banking, anything you do commerce-wise, and not only that, the internet is pretty much the be-all, end-all of commerce, and we do mm-hmm. not fortify that.
That's you know, we have a lot of scary scenarios
yeah.
possible in the near future.
Right, right. What they're thinking yeah. is that no one's yeah. going to launch a pulse bomb, but unfortunately, they would be easier mm. to do. I know they have to be fairly low level, but they'd still be easier to do than people realize. I would have, mm-hmm. you know, as much as I could. There are some lines you can't bury, but I would bury a lot of our infrastructure, which isn't. You know, it's,
oh, I am so in agreement with you on that, Raleigh.
And
bury everything we can.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, what we spend on highway taxes, particularly commercial vehicles, what they spend on highway taxes, years ago I said, hell, those roads should be heated and lit. I mean, bottom line is that we have the money to do all this, and I'm in danger of getting political, but I would think that this would be the greatest good for the public at large to shore up our infrastructure start to finish, every inch of intermodal and every inch of cyber.
I think you and I are on the same page, and I hope a lot of your listeners are too. To spend more money in the short run saves you money in the long run.
Oh, absolutely. A lot of money.
Yeah.
yeah. Well, I'm glad
yeah.
you called.
Hey,
Chris, I hope you're going to do it again.
I will. Then I'll be a third-time caller. Just quick note. While I was on hold, I sorted out my laundry. Thank
good.
You.
Good, good.
And I put a sticker on my trumpet case.
All right.
So.
Well, good, good. Good spending of time. Yes, I like it. All right, thanks.
Thanks. Take care. Bye.
You too. Yeah, absolutely. I know that when I'm on hold for various industries or whatever. Yeah, God. The one thing that bothers me, at least here, when you're on hold, you just hear me. I hate hold when you're subjected to music from hell. And I don't know who picks this out, but they clearly are sadistic. Fran and Austin, welcome to WGN Radio.
Hey, oh man, do I agree about that? Especially the ones that play, like they've got this one little thing that's on a loop, and they play it over
yeah.
and over
yeah.
and over. It's not even, I mean, it was bad enough back in the day when it was Muzak.
Right. No, it isn't
but
anymore.
Now,
yeah,
it's just,
worse. Yeah, it's worse.
You know, and it's usually some kind of electronic-y, kind of fakey-sounding something that is so repetitive. And what happens, unfortunately, is after waiting on hold for a certain amount of time, that gets stuck in my head, and I can't get it out.
And I feel really sorry for the people who have to man those lines, because by the time the customer actually gets to them, they're ready to eat them. I mean, it sets them
yeah.
up to hate them, you know?
I mean, it's hard enough to be, especially for a long time, to be put on hold as it is, you know, and have to sit there and go, God, are they ever going to answer? You know, and then by the time somebody answers, but then you got to listen to this crap they play
mm-hmm.
while you're waiting. And it's like, but the problem is, of course, if you hear silence, of course, a lot of times if I hear silence, I think I've been disconnected.
No, I understand that. But there's got to be something more preferable to, oh, by the way, they interrupted every minute by telling you how important your call is to them.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Your call is very important to me, or
yeah.
to us. Yeah,
and,
right.
And half the time, then somebody answers, except it's not somebody, it's another group of AI menus.
Right. And press this for this, and press
right.
that for that, and then either also by the time and then by the time you get somebody that doesn't speak English.
Right. The problem there is they think they do.
Yeah. And, you know, I think, because, you know, that's the kind of work I used to do. I was the switchboard operator for Sears and for a couple of other places. And when I did volunteer work and things like that, usually I was the phone person.
Right.
And so, you know, I always tried really hard to you know, get to everybody or to the thing that I always thought is you try, you can't always do it, but you try to make that person feel like they're, you know, your most important call.
Right.
And I mean, but some people were just, I remember one time this guy wanted me, I was working at Sears, and he decides that he wants me to hang up the phone, go down to the automotive department, and tell them to get off the phone. And I said, sir, I'm sorry, I can't leave my switchboard. And he said, well, I'm an important customer. I spend a lot of money at Sears and blah, blah, blah. And I said, sir, I'm sorry. I understand your frustration, but there's nothing I can do about it. The only thing I can do, and I will do this, I said, I will call the man. I will try to get a hold of the manager. I'll page the manager of the automotive department and tell him that he has got a customer that has been trying to call. I said, I remember you. You've called, you know, three or four times now, and so I understand your frustration. I will call the manager of, you know, the automotive department and tell him what's going on. That's the best I can do for you. And, you know, he was still mad. He
said, sure.
Well, you know, you should go down there. Okay, thank you, sir. Bye. You know.
I think what I probably would have figured out is what department is right next to automotive. I don't care what it is. And just give them that number. Say, call them and tell them to do it.
And then, of course, we had people that, like, they would call and they would say, I want the appliance department. And so I would say, what type of appliance are you looking for?
Right.
And they would say, well, a kitchen appliance.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to play 20 questions and I've got 10 lines ringing. Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, so I asked this lady one time, I said, well, what kind of appliance are you looking for? She says, oh, large appliances. And I said, you know, like refrigerators, like blenders. Okay. Blenders are large appliances now.
Well, I guess if you're buying for a restaurant that serves 1,000, but for everybody else.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
But... Oh, I don't know that what the last caller was saying about, you know, the and what you were saying about being on hold just reminded me of all these funny stories, you know, about what people will do. But I always wanted to say, because I'd say, Sears Cupertino, how may I direct your call? And they would say, is this Sears? And I want to say, no, I'm just messing with you. It's Kmart.
Right.
Always wanted to do that.
Yeah, I would have lasted about a day. I can see it already.
There were some things that I have said to customers that I am pretty sure that if my boss had heard me, I would not have had a job.
Oh, I'm sure.
Because this one guy, he was mad because he wanted to talk to the manager of the hardware department, who happened to be a woman. So I hooked him up with her, and he calls me back, and he says, I don't want to talk to any damn woman. I want the manager of the hardware department. And I said, well, unfortunately, sir, the manager of the hardware department happens to be a damn woman.
what did the guy say?
And so he said something else. I can't remember. He started cussing me out, so I hung up on him.
Yeah.
So he called me back, and he said, you hung up on me. And I said, and I will again if you use that language.
Right. Good for you.
You know, I don't need this. And so he said, well, you're just an airhead. And so then he asked me to do something, and I said, well, like, I don't know if I can do that, sir, because, like, I'm an airhead.
I love that.
And I thought, oh, my God, if my boss were in here.
That's perfect.
It was just a good thing I worked evenings.
Yeah.
But anyway, all of that was not even what I called about. How about that?
Of course not. That I could tell.
Of course not. It never is, is it?
Right.
I wanted to ask about a few songs. One time, quite a while ago on Trivia Night, you played a song, I think it was called Last Night. And the one line I remember for it, he does want a girlfriend. And,
oh yeah. Absolutely. I have that on KJ. Yes, I do know that. What happened last night? Yes, is that the? I don't think it's the Revlons.
Can you play that sometime? I'd love to hear that again.
Yeah, I don't think it's the Revlons, but it might be. I'll look for that. That's terrible, but yes,
and
it comes up on KJ often.
Thank you for playing my pretty words. I was going to call and request it again because it gets lost in the shuffle. So.
Yeah. Here it is, the Revlons, After Last Night.
Oh, okay.
After Last
and
Night.
And then I was trying to think of some Demento songs. There's a song that I used to like, Please Don't Bang on the Piano. Mm.
Yeah.
You remember who did that?
You know, not off the top of my head, but I do know what you're talking about.
Oh, hilarious song.
Right.
I was hoping you'd know who did that, because I cannot remember for the life of me, and I can't place his voice with that heavy Italian accent.
Right. I know it's probably Cliff Ferret, that Rosie Don't Bang on the Piano.
Yeah, that was it.
Yeah, I think I've got that. All right, hang on.
Luigi, you're so clumsy. You're going to knock my Rosie down.
Yeah, there you, that's it. Rosie Don't Bang on the Piano. Yeah, Cliff Ferry. Yeah.
Who was it? I'm sorry?
Cliff, and I say Ferry, but it's F-E-R-R-E, Ferry. I'm sure that's wrong.
Oh, okay.
But it's Ferry to me. Yeah, all right. Yeah, with the Cafe Society Quintet.
Oh,
all right. So do you want to hear that or the Revlons After Last Night next? You get to pick.
Oh, the Revlons.
Okay, you will. Coming up. Thanks for calling. Talk to you soon.
Okay, thanks, Raleigh.
Okay, good. And Bye. That's where we'll pick it up on WGN Radio. WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James, and those are the Revlons. By the way, there's a dash in there. If you're looking it up, it's R-E-V-L-O-N-S, Revlons. That one was on Reprise in 1964. David Gates arranged it, and Jimmy Bowen produced it. Although I must say, when it comes to the Revlons, probably the flip side of Gimme One More Chance on Garpex, the one that's Boy Trouble, that's the one I like the best. But After Last Night's fine, too. And hopefully Fran enjoyed that. So 888-876-5593, 8888. Raleigh Dave is in LaSalle. How's it going, Dave?
Hey, how you doing, Raleigh?
All right, I played two of your requests tonight.
You did, and I want to give you a big thank you for that. And I know you've had abbreviated shows and all this stuff, but you did play them, and I did hear them, and thank you so much.
Okay, good.
I have one quick. You were talking about these telephone services and answering, and the best answering I ever got, I knew the guy. I called him. He's a repairman. When the phone rang, here's what you heard. You know what to do. Beep. You can't get any quicker quicker than that.
Yeah.
You know, for 10 years, I thought about putting that same message.
Well, mine actually is similar to that. The problem I had is the service I have will not allow me to erase their instructions, which I hate. And so
yes.
I just say, you know who you called and you know what to do, but in case you need a refresher, and then I let it go into it.
Well, you weren't far behind this guy.
Yeah.
Listen, again, thanks for the songs. I have one quick request.
Okay.
It's a Motown from the 60s, and I loved this song the first time I heard it. Still do, and it's My Guy by Mary Wells.
Okay, sure. Biggest record she did.
Yeah.
All right.
I have to call you Monday night when we got time. I'm going to ask you one thing. Do you know of an artist by the name of Larry Tamblyn?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. I've got Larry Tamblyn records. Why, you want to hear one of them?
Oh, yeah. This is the Night.
Oh, well, that was the big one. Okay.
Okay. Sure. Do you know the story about? I know a little about it. He wound up. Am I right? He wound up doing "Dirty Water" with the what's the name of the group?
The Standells.
Yeah. There's
a connection, and
okay.
And he did a number of things, you know. But "This Is the Night" was probably, like I say, by far the biggest. That came out on Faro. So
yeah. Is that like late 50s, somewhere?
Yeah, that was probably 61.
Okay, because it was about 4 or 5 years later when he was with the Standells doing that.
Well, sort of. I'll tell you the whole deal. All right.
Okay.
Good deal.
I'll hang
thanks.
Up.
Appreciate
thanks.
It.
Okay.
All right. So, he was an L.A. guy, and his brother was in movies, Russ Tamblyn. I think he was in West Side Story. And but the deal is that anybody who likes East L.A. stuff, you know, like the Huggy Boy or Art LeBeau stuff, knows Larry Tamblyn. Like I mentioned, he was on Faro, which was one of Eddie Davis's labels. But anyhow, he went to high school in Sun Valley, and Eddie Davis found him. And the two of them had Padua Music, a publishing company, together. But, you know, he was in a variety of things, the Atlantics, the Standells, the Chakras. So we'll talk more about him. But he's typically an East L.A. boy, even though he graduated from high school in Sun City. Doesn't matter. All right, so he qualifies. 888-876-5593 is 8888-RALEIGH. And we'll get to Sherry, we'll get to James, and we still have room for you. Tomorrow night's an abbreviated show. It'll be around midnight. Could be a little later than that because it's March Madness and, you know, basketball being basketball. I don't know when it's going to end. But whenever it is, that's when we'll talk coming up. And we've got another, another 15 minutes to go right now on WGN Radio.
Since that year ago, glad that you're still here, 'cause I love you so. Just like most of
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and that one's for me. And the fact that Fred Parris, lead singer of the Five Satins, would have turned 88 yesterday. So he made it to 85, though, died just about 2 years ago now. 1957 on Ember. Yeah, the Five Satins, proving something good other than pizza, came out of New Haven. That's about the end of the list. All right, so we got Sherry in Naperville. Welcome to WGN Radio.
Hi, Raleigh.
What's up?
I wanted to mention a few things.
Yes.
And because you've been doing the boat thing, I agree with you completely regarding the barges need to be used.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that should be some prerequisite to entering a port. And David had told me, because at work he'll read the papers, that in Belgium in 2017, that same exact company and that same exact boat ran into...
Well, yes and no. You're talking about Antwerp, and it was 2016, actually. And yes, in Antwerp, it did have an incident. No one was killed or even injured, but there was damage. But that was pilot error. Unfortunately, that was proven to be that the guy running the ship shouldn't have been. And so there's been things since then that have worried me actually a little more than how they fixed that one.
Okay, but
Speaking to the phone.
Broad spectrum wise, I think that people who are experienced in the trades and knowledgeable, that 100%, 95% intelligence level has decreased exponentially, and that they're just finding bodies to perform tasks, kind of. I have noticed that over the past 5 to 8 years. I don't know. That is my personal opinion. I have no clue about that.
On this particular case, you know, I outlined what the master and the pilot would have had to go through when this was happening, and I don't think we're going to find that there was crew error at all on this. It was the incident you were talking about in Antwerp. What it did was it collided with a berth at the container terminal, and there was significant damage to the ship, which is why people bring it up, the stern and the transom. But they absolutely cleaned that up. In other words, they fixed it to the point that, you know, it was seagoing, no doubt about it. And not only were there no injuries, there was no water pollution. So everybody's talking about 2016 Antwerp.
Well, right. I mean, they couldn't steer it.
Well, no. It's not that they couldn't. No, it's not that simple. Believe me, I wouldn't hold 2016 against them. I'd be more concerned about Chile last June when the inspection revealed some deficiencies. But from what I understand on that, it wasn't propulsion, although I had heard it was. But it was that it was gauges, thermometers, and they retrofit it. You know, these ships are on the water nonstop, and they're huge, and they're going to encounter maintenance issues. But this one, by all accounts, was in pretty good shape.
Okay. It's just sad, and yesterday I was in a big funk, and I, was a pill for David when he came home that night. And it wasn't just that news story that was going on and on and on all day. It was also the other story about Elburn vet guy. I'm not even going to mention it because it just disgusted me.
I don't even know about this.
Oh, you don't want to know. Okay. We had some email from James, but I don't.
Okay.
I don't. It just put a big pit in my stomach and set me off in the ozone. But other than that, it was so disgusting. It's not even funny.
Well, don't.
And James maybe can fill you in on that.
Or maybe not. It sounds like I don't want to hear it at all. The other sad news today.
No,
which,
you wouldn't.
Yeah. Other sad news today.
Because you would be disgusted on humanity. Yeah.
All right. Didn't get a lot of air. Didn't get a lot of play. But rest in peace, Joe Lieberman. 82 years old, died.
Yeah.
Very, very sad. And he actually had a backbone. He stood up for what he believed. He left the Democrat Party, and I know there were a lot of people who didn't like that, but bottom line was it's nice when somebody walks their own talk.
And it's sad when you die from a fall.
Okay, you got to use your phone. You got to speak directly into the phone. It's
sad
required.
When he dies from a fall. Well,
that is very common, and I don't know what the complications in his case, they did not elaborate, were. But for people who are over 65, deaths associated with falls is more than most common. So,
okay.
You know, that doesn't surprise me, but I don't know what the complications were, and the family may never release it. But
well,
yeah.
I know there was a broken pelvis. It's hard to stand, walk, and pee.
Well, that won't kill you necessarily, but in any event, rest in peace to Joe. Like I say, I was surprised he didn't get more play.
All right. Love you, Raleigh.
Thanks for calling.
I'll let you go.
All right. Good deal. So, if you remember, the Democrats were furious when he, you know, went over to John McCain and supported him. And then McCain, before he died, had said that he was sorry that he chose Sarah Palin, that he wished he had chose Joe Lieberman. I doubt anything would have changed, but it was an interesting comment nonetheless. So 888-876-5593 is 888-88-RALEIGH. And Gary is in Austin. What's happening tonight, Gary?
Well, hey, Raleigh. And, I was listening on Monday. You were talking about New Orleans radio,
yeah.
And I used to listen at night to Larry Regan on occasion, and he played things like the Dickersons and
right,
stuff like
absolutely, because it was a great MOR radio station.
Yeah, and they 1280 was far better to hear in Dallas than 1350 was.
Well, yeah.
So after midnight, they were pretty listenable. So,
right.
You know, I would listen to them on occasion, but... they had some interesting callers on the talk stations in New Orleans in those days. In fact, one of them I remember hearing was our very own Jim.
Right, right.
Oops. Who I later met or talked to years later.
Yeah.
And I actually have met him. And I said, hey, I remember hearing you on WGSOSMB or whatever. and so we had all sorts of fun talking about that. And so, but it's great to hear that. But I have a couple of questions about some Arizona stations.
Oh, yeah?
One of them actually is a personality. What is the Manic Hispanic?
Oh, the Manic Hispanic, occasionally I'll hear him. Yes, on that, that's the station from Phoenix that 104, I think it's 104.3.
Mega, I think.
Yeah, Mega, right, exactly, which don't have too good a signal, but nonetheless, yeah. He was on for quite a while, KAJM is Mega's, it's was jamming for a while, but in any event, I'm pretty sure he's back. He left for a while. He didn't get along with Snake when Snake was running it. And,
right.
And after Snake left, he came back. And they used to run Art LeBeau every Sunday night, which, of course, I loved.
Right. Yeah, they did.
Yeah.
And I remember that he was on 106.3 in Tucson for a while.
Yes. Yes.
And I thought he might have been doing both of them, mornings on one and afternoons on the other, but I may be wrong about that. But I always enjoy listening to him.
Yeah, James Rebus is his name. That's the Manic Hispanic.
Right.
And he used to have a late night bowling thing on Sunday, and by the time I finally got around to want to go, he stopped doing it, which I hated because I would have loved to have gone. I'm sure would have freaked him out a little because I don't think we're his demo, but nonetheless,
yeah.
That's Mega, and they're a little signal challenged, which has been the problem with that all along. But so many stations, you know, after Docket 8090 wanted to move into metropolitan areas, and some did very well, and some are on the fringes.
I know when I used to pass through Arizona in the early 2000s, going between Texas and California, there was no sign of them in the middle of downtown Phoenix, at least.
Yeah.
In those days. Now, they might have upgraded since 03, as last time I passed through there, but...
Yeah, they still have holes, and yeah, Sierra Broadcasting has them, and they still have some issues, but, you know, the nice thing about it is, for whatever reason, when I'm in Globe, I can get them in Globe.
You know, it's like when I was on Galveston Island, some of the stations at the site Endeavors were stronger than the senior roads.
Right, exactly. You know, it's one of those things I'm... See, it's a Camp Verde license. And or Mega as it is now. And Camp Verde is interesting because it looks like that's a perfect shoot-in, much like the Pinales look great, but it just isn't. And so, you know, what can I say? They try, but I don't think that there's been any upgrades in any big way that I know of. You know, they're running 40,000 watts and effective rated power, obviously, at about 2,600 feet. So it's not that high. But they're right up there in Sierra, like I say, and I'm looking at a map to see if I can see any difference. And no, I think it's just where it was. And that's pretty far north, you know, and it just is. So,
And some of those 80, 90 things are like 60, 70 miles away.
Oh, I know. But in some cases, even 70 miles away, you know, depending on how they've engineered and where they can put the stick, it's really done well covering the area.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, everybody hears about the guy who, you know, bought the station for $1 million and sold it for $75 million and all that. And so they all think that they too can do that. But, you know, Cortis Lakes, if you look at that, you're going to get into the north side of Phoenix, no doubt about it. You'll get into part of the west side, which is good for their format. But, John said I have to shut up. I have a half hour tomorrow night or so, maybe a whole hour. Call me back.
Okay, I will. Thanks.
All right. And on that note, we thank Adam for keeping us on the air and John for screening your calls. But above all, I thank you for calling. We'll do it again tomorrow night, right after March Madness, right here on WGN Radio.